Tonight I'm going to talk about the ideal of a spiritual warrior, being a spiritual warrior. And I'll begin by saying that this is an ancient metaphor, the metaphor of warfare or being a warrior, comparing that to spirituality or personal growth. And I realize that for some people in America in 2024, especially in the Bay Area, it might seem contradictory. You know, war is about killing and mayhem and all that. It seems the opposite of spirituality, which is about peace and love. But really, the through line around which the metaphor works is the idea of discipline. Discipline has been essential. It's essential in the modern military. In fact, probably the most disciplined American citizens are those citizens in the armed forces. And throughout ancient times, armies have always been disciplined. You know, for very good reason. And if you just consider, for example, you know, suppose there were two armies meeting, approximately the same number of men, approximately the same weapons, but let's say one army was completely disciplined under a general, and the other army was essentially a large mob. You know, just, you know, everyone doing things as they saw fit, but no discipline. I take it as almost self-evident that that would almost always result not merely in a victory, but really a rout. The disciplined army would have such an advantage over the undisciplined mob. And in personal growth, discipline makes a huge difference also. If you consider, say we're talking about people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, say you have 10 people who have practiced discipline for multiple decades. You know, the tremendous self-discipline in their spiritual work. And then you compare that to 10 people who have very little discipline. And the people who have very little discipline, they might well be likable people. They might be funny people and entertaining, you know. But I think it would be quite likely that, on average, the disciplined people would have much more satisfaction in their life than the undisciplined people. And the disciplined people would have many more options available to them. Not only professional options, but also interpersonal options, and especially internal options about how to deal with various challenging situations in life, you know. It's more likely that more often the disciplined people would be acting from agency, acting from intention, and acting with ease, as opposed to the ongoing struggle of the undisciplined people. And so discipline has profound effect to shape a life. And really, really having self-discipline, it's one of the greatest expressions of self-love, actually. So what does discipline look like? What does a life of discipline look like? What does being a spiritual warrior look like? And for this, I'm going to draw on the Japanese tradition of Bushido, the art of the warrior. This was the samurai code. And in particular, the seven virtues of Bushido. So briefly, these virtues are duty, courage, benevolence, courtesy, truthfulness, honor, and loyalty. So duty, of course, for a samurai, in part, it would be duty to an overlord or the shogun or something like that. But in our case, duty has a lot to do with responsibility, you know. I have a duty to have good boundaries. I have a good duty to I have a duty to practice good self-care. I have a duty to do everything I can to expand my capacity. You know, I have a duty to pursue my spiritual growth in any one of a number of ways, you know. And of course, we also have duties in the external world. You know, how well did we perform our duties in our professional situations, in our interpersonal relationships, you know. So I'll tell you a samurai story about duty. There was a samurai was a servant of an overlord, and an assassin came at one point, snuck in, killed the overlord. And so then the samurai was duty-bound to hunt down that assassin and avenge the death. So it took him over a year, but finally he cornered the assassin, and he's about to kill him. And the assassin, in a moment of just sheer terror, spit in the samurai's face. And at that moment, the samurai sheathed his sword, turned around and walked away. And that seems paradoxical. And the Japanese explanation, at least to American ears, doesn't initially make sense. He sheathed his sword because he had gotten angry. You know, and Americans would think, well, if he got angry, how come he didn't kill the guy right on the spot? That would make it more like he had killed the guy right on the spot, you know? But the funny thing is, the samurai had this deep training to act from duty. He was hunting down this assassin as a matter of duty. He was fighting to get to that encounter as a matter of duty. When the assassin spit in his face and made him angry, if he had killed him in that moment, that would have been a personal act, not an act of duty. And the samurai had enough discipline to recognize that difference. I'm not here to perform a personal act of murder. I'm here to perform a duty-bound act, and I can't do that if I'm angry. You know? And so it adds this interesting layer to, you know, some of the things that are good for us, some of the things that are our duty. You know, we have a certain amount of drive. Of course I'm going to do this. This is the right thing to do, you know. But how dutiful are we even when we don't have that drive? How dutiful are we even when it's emotionally difficult to do, you know? And that's the real test of duty. The next quality is courage, and courage is slightly different from bravery. They're often used together. Bravery is a little more specifically about external achievements, about action that would be evident to, you know, people in the external world. Courage comes from the French cœur, the heart, and courage is about living from the heart, about bringing heart qualities out into the world, that kind of bravery. And it's funny because we always have more courage and more resilience and more strength than we think. You know, ego has a very, ego sells itself short, basically, you know, it thinks it only can do so much, and it can do much more. In fact, this is one of the reasons that it's often very healthy to put ourselves into the situations that stretch us a bit. We can have that immediate discovery that, oh, I didn't think I could do that, but I can, you know. So I like to distinguish between what I call small-minded courage and large-hearted courage. Small-minded courage means simply, I'm going to risk myself only up to what I think my limits are. I'm only going to push myself only to what I think I can handle, and then I'm going to stop. And again, if we're acting according to what the mind says about what our limits are, we are, by definition, selling ourselves short. large-hearted courage is more about, I'm going to trust, you know? And in particular, large-hearted courage is less about following the head and more about following the core. Even when the head is afraid and creating thousands of stories about why I shouldn't undertake something, sometimes the core will be telling me, I have to walk in this direction, you know? And large-hearted courage is just trusting the core, trusting the process. One of the greatest metaphors for large-hearted courage comes from the Beowulf story. And I believe I've talked about this before. Beowulf, he kills Grendel, and then something else comes out of the swamp. It's Grendel's mother. And then they follow Grendel's mother down to this lake. Now, none of Beowulf's men are willing to go down into the lake because it's so scary. And for whatever reason, Beowulf himself has to take off all his armor. So he goes unarmed down into the lake. But once he's down in the lake, at the bottom of the lake, about to fight Grendel's mother, there's this ancient sword on the wall. And he takes that, and he uses that to kill Grendel's mother. You know, what the myth is telling us is when we jump in, we don't always feel like we have what we need, but we find what we need if we pursue it authentically, you know? And all that is part of large-hearted courage. And large-hearted courage is really one of the characteristics of a spiritual warrior. Now, these next two, benevolence and courtesy, I'll pause a second and say the Bushido tradition was influenced, of course, heavily by the Zen tradition, but it was also influenced to a surprising degree by the Confucian tradition. And these next two come right out of Confucius, basically. So benevolence, that's really Confucius's central concept. Benevolence is closely related to nobility, but it's a little more than that. It's not only conducting myself with nobility, it's about this ability to invite nobility out of others, to treat others in such a way that makes it easier for them to respond with nobility. That is really benevolence. It's this profound, you know, not only seeing the best in others, but relating to the best in others and inviting out the best in others. You know, that is benevolence. And courtesy, this one is sometimes translated as courtesy or propriety. Really, no one word does it justice. Confucius said of himself, I am not an innovator. But in fact, he was. It was a very humble thing for him to say. And one of his biggest innovations has to do with this particular word. So it was a character in ancient China. And it was used very specifically. It was a very narrow concept. It was used very specifically for relations within the ancestor worship, relations in the most sacred ritual that was practiced, you know? And it was about the kind of relationship that people should have, the kind of courtesy or propriety they should be obeying as they were in sacred space, as they were performing this ritual, you know? And so all the reverence and dignity of that ritual. Confucius took this highly specialized term and applied it to all human relationships, with the implication that in all human relationships, anytime two people are connecting, there is something sacred there and something to be honored, you know? And so reverence might be a good word, a good translation, but even reverence falls short because, of course, sometimes when people are connecting, genuine connecting sometimes involves a lot of irreverence, you know? I mean, two friends can be irreverent about a sacred cow, and people who know each other well can even be irreverent toward each other And there's something endearing about that, you know? So it's not necessarily prescribing a particular kind of behavior so much as bringing a kind of awareness, a kind of awareness of the preciousness and the irreplaceable quality of any moment of connection. So that is that all that is contained in this idea of courtesy. The next is truthfulness or honor. Samurai were often renowned for their truthfulness, for their veracity. And so when we think of honesty, we often think of, accurate reporting of facts, which is important, but I would call that kind of the kiddie level of honesty. That's expected, but a deeper level of honesty is when we can be honest about how we feel, honest about our vulnerability, honest about our struggles, honest about asking for help. That kind of honesty is much deeper. And really the most potent honesty is when we're just rigorously honest with ourselves. When we prioritize telling the truth to ourselves above anything else. And that's a hard thing to do. That's a hard thing to do because some inner truths are very threatening and very uncomfortable, And it takes a particularly rigorous practice to continually go back to, but what is the truth, regardless of how it feels? The next is honor. This one resonates not only with the Confucian tradition, but also very much with Buddhism. And really, in some ways, with many of the world's religious traditions. One very Western way to frame it is, the Bible says humans are created in the image of God. And what would it mean to live that way? To live as an image of God in the world, In Hinduism, they believe that each one of us carries the Atman, the divine innermost self, What would it mean to live in a way that was worthy of the Atman that I carry, or worthy of the Buddha nature that I carry, And again, there's a kind of nobility, there's a kind of self-honoring, self-lifting up in honor. Combined with the recognition that I'm lifting myself up not because of anything special about me, but because of what's inherent about being a human being, and carrying it that way is implicitly an invitation to everyone around me, living from that place of honor is an example. We all could be living from that place of honor, that kind of thing. And finally, loyalty. Loyalty is, we think of loyalty very much in interpersonal terms, but are you loyal to yourself? And in particular, if you consider, there's head and there's, people sometimes try to force head consistency. That's not really the same as loyalty. Each one of us has a quiet voice in our core. And it's hard to contact that voice. It's hard to establish a relationship with that voice. And that voice often has wisdom for us, but sometimes that wisdom is challenging. And the tricky thing is, if I don't make a habit, like every time the voice tells me something I don't like, if I don't listen to it, then it's harder to contact that voice. It's just like a person. If a person, anytime if a person's trying to give me advice and I always tell them shut up, then they're gonna stop giving me advice. And so how loyal can we be to what we, you know, when we have that intuitive grasp of what is right for us, how loyal can we be to that? You know? And how loyal can we be to what we know is right, what we know is authentic, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's inconvenient, even when it's the last thing we want to do, you know? All that is part of loyalty. You know? How could you live in a way so that other people would describe you as loyal? You know, would people describe you as loyal right now? And if not, how could you live in a way so that people would describe you that way, you know? So those are the seven courages of Bushido. And these, of course, are very high ideals. And I guess I just want to say, as a matter of balance, it's always funny in spiritual life. We have to have this profound balance on the one hand between holding up incredibly high ideals and pursuing these incredible ideals and pushing ourselves every day to get closer to those incredibly high ideals. We have to balance that with complete and extraordinary self-love and acceptance, you know, because the archetypal truth is wherever we're starting, no matter how neurotic, no matter how screwed up, no matter how dysfunctional, we are all more lovable than we can possibly imagine, you know? And it's a hard thing to hold all that self-love, but also hold that incredible fierce drive to push forward, you know? That's the balance that spirituality really calls for. So with that, I'll share the quote sheet. Okay, there's the quote sheet. At the top, I list the seven virtues of Bushido. And then I have a long section from quotes of Carlos Castaneda, who has a lot to say about the spiritual warrior tradition. That's really a whole other spiritual warrior tradition, the Yaqui tradition. He said, "To achieve the mood of a warrior is not a simple matter. It is a revolution. It is to regard the lion and the water rats and our fellow men as equals, is a magnificent act of a warrior spirit. It takes power to do that." Another quote, "A man goes to self-knowledge as he goes to war, wide awake, with fear, with respect, and with absolute assurance." "To be a warrior is not simply a matter of wishing to be one. It is rather an endless struggle that will go on to the very last moment of our lives. Nobody is born a warrior in exactly the same way that no one is born an average man. We make ourselves into one or the other." "Only as a warrior can one withstand the path of knowledge. A warrior cannot complain or regret anything. His life is an endless challenge, and challenges cannot possibly be good or bad. Challenges are simply challenges." "All of us, whether or not we are warriors, have a cubic centimeter of chance that pops out in front of our eyes from time to time. The difference between an average man and a warrior is that the warrior is aware of this, and one of his tasks is to be alert, deliberately waiting, so that when his cubic centimeter pops out, he has the necessary speed, the prowess, to pick it up. The basic difference between an ordinary man and a warrior is that the warrior takes everything as a challenge, while the ordinary man takes everything as a blessing or curse. The spirit of a warrior is not geared to indulging or complaining, nor is it geared to winning or losing. The spirit of a warrior is geared only to struggle, and every struggle is a warrior's last battle on earth. The outcome matters very little to him, In his last battle on Earth, the warrior lets his spirit flow free and clear. And as he wages his battle, knowing that his intent is impeccable, a warrior laughs and laughs. A warrior must learn to make every act count, since he's going to be here in this world for only a short time, a short while, in fact, too short for witnessing all the marvels of it. As a rule of thumb for a warrior is that he makes his decisions so carefully that nothing may happen as a result of them that can surprise him, much less drain his power. And the final quote from Carlos Castaneda: feeling important makes one heavy, clumsy, and vain. To be a warrior, one needs to be light and fluid. From the Buddha, from the Dhammapada, many scholars feel that the Dhammapada contains authentic quotes from the actual historical Buddha. So this quote: more than your mother, more than your father, more than all your family, a well-disciplined mind does greater good. Confucius says quite simply, he who conquers himself is the mightiest warrior. Swami Vivekananda said, you have to grow from the inside out. None can teach you, none can make you spiritual. There is no other teacher but your own soul. Helen Keller said, when painful duty fulfilled makes the next plainer and easier. That's just a wonderful quote about the growth of capacity. Khalil Gibran said, out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars. Morihei Ueshiba, the founder of Aikido, said, there are no contests in the art of peace. A true warrior is invincible because he or she contests with nothing. Defeat means to defeat the mind of contention that we harbor within. Napoleon Hill said, if you do not conquer self, you will be conquered by the self. And in a very similar vein, William Feather said, if we do not discipline ourselves, the world will do it for us. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel said, self-respect is the fruit of discipline. The sense of dignity grows with the ability to say no to oneself. You know, it's a wonderful question for all of us. How well do we say yes to ourselves, and how well do we say no to ourselves? Shinryu Suzuki said, discipline is creating the situation. And that's a funny one. That's a subtle one. In other words, discipline doesn't guarantee results, but discipline puts us in the position where we have, where we can make the choices that we want to make, you know. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said, the most beautiful people we have known are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found their way out of the depths. These persons have an appreciation, a sensitivity, and an understanding of life that fills them with compassion, gentleness, and a deep loving concern. Beautiful people do not just happen. It's a wonderful quote. Henry Nouwen, the Christian mystic, said, discipline means to prevent everything in your life from being filled up. Discipline means that somewhere you're not occupied and certainly not preoccupied. In the spiritual life, discipline means to create the space in which something can happen that you hadn't planned or counted on. The Dalai Lama says, bodhisattvas are often referred to as enlightened heroes or warriors. They are highly altruistic beings the wisdom to realize that by dedicating themselves to the welfare of other sentient beings, the fulfillment of their own self-interest automatically comes as a byproduct. A couple from Choyang Trungpa, he said, to be a warrior is to learn to be genuine in every moment of your life. He also said, to be a spiritual warrior, one must have a broken heart. Without a broken heart and the sense of tenderness and vulnerability, your warriorship is untrustworthy. I love that one. Bruce Lee says, the successful warrior is the average man with laser-like focus. Jose Eduardo dos Santos said, there's no magic wand that can resolve our problems. The solution rests with our work and our discipline. Jack Kornfield said, to open deeply, as genuine spiritual life requires, we need tremendous courage and strength, a kind of warrior spirit. He also said, one of my favorite quotes, the trouble is that you think you have time. A couple from Paulo Coelho, he said, the two worst strategic mistakes to make are acting prematurely and letting an opportunity slip. To avoid this, the warrior treats each situation as if it were unique and never resorts to formulae, recipes, or other people's opinions. He also said, a warrior of light knows that in the silence of his heart, he will hear an order that will guide him. Sangyo Rinpoche said, to be a spiritual warrior means to develop a special kind of courage, one that is innately intelligent, gentle, and fearless. Spiritual warriors can still be frightened, but even so, they are courageous enough to taste suffering, to relate clearly to their fundamental fear, and to draw out without evasion the lessons from difficulty. Mark Nepo said, the things that can restore us have to get in too. This is what the wisdom of an open heart is all about. All the spiritual traditions speak of this, but I love the Tibetan tradition. A spiritual warrior always has a crack in his heart because that is how the mysteries can get in. The poet David White, this was during a webinar during the pandemic, he said, one of the greatest disciplines of existence is just to stay up with the frontier of your own maturation, to have said goodbye to what you need to say goodbye to, and to be saying hello to what you should be saying hello to. But caught in the enmeshment of the strategic mind, which coalesces its identity around false stories and holds on to them, quite often we're a good 6 to 7 years behind where we actually are. That one is worth pondering. Anthony St. Martin said, empaths did not come into the world to be victims. We came to be warriors. Be brave. Stay strong. We need all hands on deck. Nikki Rose says, the length of our lives are far shorter than we realize. And half the time when we're becoming aware of such truth, we have lived most of it as someone else. And finally, Race Bemenikin says, self-discipline is self-love. Show me a person who is not disciplined, and I will show you a person who doesn't love themselves.